From Bedford to Williamsport, Ridgeway to Reading, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Independent Fiscal Office is projecting a $1.7 billion budget deficit as Pennsylvania begins the 2019-2020 state budgeting process. Nate Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation is here with a look at this and other challenges that will face the new General Assembly in January. Equiteam Support Services utilizes horses to provide psychotherapy and assisted learning services. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Ellie Williams of Equiteam in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And Congress is back for a lame duck session, but there's still much that can be done before it adjourns for the holidays. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Nate Benefield from the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The general election was more than 3 weeks ago, but finally the race for a state House seat in Washington County has been decided. Incumbent State Representative Bud Cook, a Republican, edged out his Democratic opponent, Steve Toprani, by 15 votes after provisional ballots were counted. Cook was first elected to the seat in 2016, succeeding longtime Representative Pete Daley, who had retired. So the next time you think one vote doesn't matter, ask Cook or Toprani, who will tell you it does. Analysis of voter turnout from this month's elections finds a significant increase in voter participation from 43% in the 2014 midterms to 58% this year. Voter turnout was up in every one of Pennsylvania's 67 counties, but there was a particularly large increase in turnout in the suburban Philadelphia counties of Montgomery and Chester. Republicans suffered across-the-board losses in congressional and state legislative seats in those two counties. Pennsylvania's infrastructure, our roads and bridges, along with railroads and airports, garnered only a C- in a new report issued by the Pennsylvania State Council of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Among the infrastructure receiving the lowest ratings were our systems for delivering drinking water and managing stormwater. Our wastewater systems only managed a D grade. On the positive side, the state's freight rail system earned a B, and our ability to deal with hazardous waste garnered a B minus. As you might expect, the civil engineers are encouraging more investment in infrastructure projects, particularly by local governments. If you don't like your job, think about the law enforcement officers who had to body cavity search 37-year-old Christopher Miller. They found 40 bags of heroin inside him, and that evidence led to Miller's conviction this past week on charges of possession with intent to deliver. Miller was arrested after being involved in a disturbance at a Lancaster County bar. When he was apprehended by police, they found 20 bags of heroin in his pockets. The subsequent body cavity search yielded 40 more bags. Hopefully, the officers involved in the search get some sort of bonus pay. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Now that the elections are over, we learn Pennsylvania will face a $1.7 billion budget deficit for the fiscal year beginning on July 1st. For a look at the factors driving this projected deficit and how it might be funded, we turn to Nate Benefield. Nate is Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy in Harrisburg. Nate, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Nate, as we approach the arrival of a new General Assembly here at the first of the year, there are going to be a wide array of issues, policy issues, both old and new. And as happens every year, we do have a state budget. Right now, there are rumblings the state budget will start out $1.7 billion. That's billion with a B. $1.7 billion out of whack. How in the world do we get into that situation?
Well, Loman, that's accurate that the Independent Fiscal Office forecast next year's budget deficit to be $1.7 billion. And it's not because of a lack of revenue coming in. They project revenue will come in a billion-dollar increase. The economy is going very like gangbusters. But what's happened is that last year's budget was an election year budget, meaning the governor and lawmakers, even though they signed it early, got it done on time, even though they didn't raise taxes last year, they really pushed all the costs off into the future. There's a number of one-time revenue sources they used to balance the budget. Now we're going to have to pay those bills using tax dollars. There's a number of debt payments that they borrowed money over the last couple of budgets that are now having to pay interest on that beginning next year. So really they just pushed a lot of costs off until after the election to have to deal with them.
As we look at this deficit, it's starting out at $1.7 billion. Nate, I assume that's before the governor even starts proposing spending increases and new spending programs?
Yeah, this is largely what's called a cost-to-carry budget. So it's paying for things that we already are paying for with basically normal cost increases, adjustments for inflation, adjustments for population, but isn't any new programs that are being created, with the exception that some that were actually created in the middle of the year. There was, for example, the governor reinstituted a program, general assistance, a welfare program, after the court said, well, the law was passed unconstitutionally. The governor reinstituted that. So that's adding $150 million there in a new program. But yeah, you expect in February he'll have new ideas of things he wants to do that will add to that budget deficit.
So we're going to start out at $1.7 billion in the hole. The governor is likely to add significant new spending, and that will balloon however hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, all of which, Nate, seems to create a situation where we can also expect the governor is going to be asking for more revenue, more taxes from we the taxpayer. What can we expect from him there?
Well, that's a really good question, because this year when he campaigned for re-election, he said, we don't need any more new taxes. I'm not going to propose any tax increases. That was his plan, with the exception of he wants another tax on natural gas, the natural gas severance tax, on top of what the industry is already paying in the impact fee and other taxes. So we're not expecting that. But he really has tried to at least campaign on not needing new taxes. Whether he keeps to that or if it's more like his first year in his first term where he proposed more than $4 billion in tax increases, that remains to be seen, and I think it's a big question of how he proposes closing this budget gap.
Yes, there's a lot of parlor games going on around Harrisburg, whether we're going to see the Governor Wolf of his first year, where he proposed massive new tax increases, or the Governor Wolf of his last year, where he sort of just accepted what was there because it was an election year, as you pointed out. So going forward, let's talk, first of all, about this so-called severance tax. It has been a goal of his since the beginning. Republicans have stood firm. Interestingly, many of the Republicans, Nate, who supported the governor's call for a severance tax were in southeastern Pennsylvania, and they were defeated for reelection. So the fact the Republican caucus, in particularly the House, has gotten far more conservative, is this setting us up for what could be another lengthy budget battle?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate characterization, that Republicans lost seats in the House and Senate, but most of those lawmakers who lost had supported the severance tax. And those who remain, there aren't a lot of Republican support for raising taxes. The Republicans are probably more conservative as a caucus and are unlikely to go along with any sort of tax increase. So I think if the governor comes out the way he did in his first term, proposing massive tax hikes, there is going to be an impasse there, a challenge between a governor who wants more revenue and a more conservative legislature.
As we look past the budget battle, which could likely occupy virtually all of 2019, there are a whole wide range of other policy issues. And let's talk a bit about economic competitiveness here, Nate. The big news of the last week or so is the fact that Amazon decided to locate its so-called HQ2, which apparently is going to be HQ2 A and B, as they pick Northern Virginia and New York. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh had attempted to lure that headquarters to Pennsylvania. They failed. Why did they fail?
The state offered Amazon more than $5 billion. They rejected that. They got incentives in Virginia and New York, but a lot less than that, which really goes to show just our overall economic climate, that the skilled labor force, and there's a lot of talk of employers struggling to find people who are willing and able to work in skilled positions. It's our regulatory climate that we have, one that really hampers businesses' ability to grow. and our overall tax climate, which is one of the highest in the country. And fortunately, you know, politicians like to look at big projects like Amazon as an opportunity to, you know, and give them incentives while hurting every other business in Pennsylvania. And there are nearly a million small businesses across the state that pay this high tax burden, but only the big players like Amazon are able to leverage deals and promises from the state.
We are talking with Nate Benefield, who is the Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the Commonwealth Foundation. We're talking about those policy issues that will dominate the agenda here in Pennsylvania. When we talked earlier about the possibility of yet another tax on the natural gas industry and a budget deficit, all of this, I would imagine, is causing any business that might be considering locating or expanding in Pennsylvania to maybe sit back and take a second look, because there's quite a bit of uncertainty here, is there not?
Yeah, there absolutely has been. From, you talk about natural gas severance tax that affects the gas industry. Talk about different proposals that have happened over the last 4 years, from a tax on warehousing to a hotel tax increase. Even, you know, had to fight the Wolf administration after the federal tax reform that they changed the rules unilaterally regarding depreciation, which a lot of businesses said, why would I ever invest in Pennsylvania when you change the rules on corporate taxes different than what every other state in the country does it? And that really just added to the uncertainty that businesses had looking at Pennsylvania.
Public education, of course, is something that the governor and Democrats and the left keep saying, throw more money at it, throw more money at it. Yet we are looking at tens of thousands of jobs, particularly in the manufacturing sector, in the trades, that are going unfilled because we don't have a skilled labor force. Before we start putting more money into public education, is it not time that we take a look at what we are educating people to do relative to where the job opportunities are?
Yeah, absolutely, Loman. That talk about the debate that happened during the gubernatorial election, it was all about more money. It was not about the quality of education or what type of education students are getting. That students are not graduating high school prepared for college and not getting the career and technical training that the current job environment is there requires. They're not getting computer training. There's a lot of manufacturing opportunity out there, kind of these skilled jobs. But we're not doing that training, not offering that, not encouraging students to take that. And that's why businesses across the state have complained about not being able to find workers for the jobs that are out there.
Have you detected in any of the policy discussions that go on relative to education any sort of a shift in the approach to particularly technical training?
Yeah, I think there is starting to have that conversation. It's a slow process, but it had been the mentality of, like, every student needs to go to college, needs to go to a four-year university. Starting to see now that coming out with high debt, a large majority aren't even graduating, not even earning a degree. They're just accruing the debt and leaving school early. But those that do find, there aren't really jobs that require that major. They've got a degree in cultural studies or something like that, or philosophy, or like my degree in political science. There aren't really jobs for those types of degrees. But the technical training, the skills training, is actually what students need to be able to find jobs in today's economy. And there is a shift now in the mindset in politicians and in public policy that we need to do more on the career and technical education front and not try to push everyone into a four-year university.
We have been talking with Nate Benefield, who is the Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the Commonwealth Foundation. Nate, tell us a bit about the Commonwealth Foundation. Also, where can folks go on the web to learn more?
The Commonwealth Foundation, we're a state-based think tank with a mission to advance free market policies so that all Pennsylvanians can flourish. And they can find out more at our website, which is www.commonwealthfoundation.org.
Nate Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation. Nate, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Loman.
The use of horses to provide assisted learning and psychotherapy services is the mission of Equiteam Support Services. To learn more about what they do and how they do it, we turn to Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation, who has Ellie Williams in the Community Benefit Spotlight. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Ellie, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Ellie, share with the listeners a little bit the inspiration to have started a program like the one that you are running today.
I'm the executive director of a nonprofit in Dallastown, Pennsylvania called Equiteam Support Services, and it's an organization that helps at-risk youth, families in need, and veterans by utilizing equine-assisted psychotherapy model using horses in mental health.
We're aware of a number of programs like that throughout the country, but yours is a little different. What makes your program stand out from other equine therapy programs?
Well, I think what makes ours so unique is we utilize some different techniques within our EGALA model work. We have trained professionals working with attachment and complex trauma and that sort of thing, and really go to that deeper level and some severe issues that we deal with.
Share a little bit about what a number of typical clients might look like and why they would come to you.
We work a lot with children's services where children have experienced child abuse and neglect. And a lot of times these children are in foster care and have had a significant go at life and a lot of abuse and history with drugs and alcohol and that sort of thing. And we utilize the equine-assisted psychotherapy model to utilize horses within, you know, telling their story through the horses, being able to tell the horses some things that have happened to them, and just give them an outlet to work through the challenges that they face.
What would be a typical age of your clients?
We have a broad range. A lot of times we have children as young as 4 or 5 years old, and some of the veterans we work with are in their 50s and 60s.
And what is it about a horse that makes somebody want to tell their story and that have that bonding occur?
Horses are a prey animal, and being a prey animal, they're very aware of every nonverbal around them, emotions, feelings, and they really tie into that, and they can really connect with the clients and the issues that they face.
Tell us what a prey animal is, and then I'll let you continue.
Being a prey animal, they're always the ones that are being hunted by the lion or just having to look over to their shoulder. They're not a predator like a cat or a dog. So they're the ones that are really making sure that they can keep themselves safe.
So they're very aware and attentive and accepting in the kinds of situations that you put them in.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
How do you know that a horse is going to be a good fit for what you do?
Well, there's no specialized training for them. We just have to really focus on their personalities, make sure that they're kind, they're safe. We do want them to be reactive. We want them to be able to connect with the clients. So we want them to have some personality, but there's no kicking, no biting, that sort of thing.
We assume that that goes for the client as well?
Well, sometimes we have some of those, but we have to work through those issues.
How do your clients find you? How do they find out about you, and then how do they find you?
We have a website, which is equiteam.org, and we can have referrals through there. We also get referrals through psychiatrists, psychologists, and also through our contract, which is with Children's Services in our area.
So you are following a model that has high levels of standards, and you have been recognized within that model as a distinguished organization. Talk a little bit about that.
We work very hard to make sure that we run as professional as possible. Being a distinguished program, we have outcomes for all of our clients. We continue to provide services at over an 85% success rate of clients leaving treatment with improved mental and emotional stability. We make sure we have very detailed counseling assessments. We have treatment plans. We provide summaries and just always keeping up to date on all of our continuing education.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Ellie Williams, the Executive Director of the Equiteam Support Services Organization in Dallastown, Pennsylvania. Ellie, what inspired you to get involved in this program? You're a founder, so what inspired you?
My life, I've always wanted to help people, and I have a love of horses, and being able to do both of them within one format has been just wonderful.
And once you made the connection with the organization, it came around somewhat very nicely, as the record shows, and you have some very good staff, and you've got some, and I was going to say you have very good staff, but you have two kinds of staff. You have the human staff, and you have the horse staff. Is the interviewing different?
Yes, just a little bit. Yeah.
Actually, I've been down to your program, and it's a beautiful facility, and it's serene and very peaceful, and the horses that I was able to get connected with are just very sweet and very, very nice staff, and their motivations are different than human staff, but certainly there's a level of respect and manners and all those kinds of things that the horse has to have before you can put them in with a client.
Yes, absolutely.
So how are you funded?
Most of our funding comes from grants and fundraising. We do have contracts that cover a portion of our services, but we do reach out to different organizations in our area and nationwide that help support us.
What's the progression that a client goes through when they first walk through the doors through graduation?
We have a referral system, so the referral is made, and we have an intake appointment where the client comes for a tour and is able to visit the facility and meet the horses and understand a little bit about the AGALA model, followed by the very intensive counseling assessment. I run the detailed history of challenges, but also strengths, because strengths really play a big piece into the client's journey. And we'll have weekly sessions. Sessions are about 50 minutes to an hour. And typically sessions can go for 3-4 months. But when I have some significant trauma, it could go longer, a year or so.
At the end of the day, how do you know you're making a difference? I mean, you work long hours, your staff works hard, the horses work hard. How do you know you're making a difference to measure up to all that time and work?
Well, I'll tell you, it's the sitting in on the adoption hearings, working with a client for a year, 18 months, working through significant trauma to allow them to be able to connect with an adoptive parent and to be there during that process when they say, yes, I want you to be my child forever, and to be able to know that our services and help them find mental health, behavioral stability that makes it all worth it. It really does.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Ellie Williams, the executive director and founder of a program in Dallastown, Pennsylvania, named Equiteam Support Services. Ellie, you're doing great work down there, and we wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
If people want to learn more about your program or how they might be able to help, how would they find you again?
Our website is www.equiteam.org. It's EQUITEAM.
Ellie, thank you for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio Program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Back to you, Loman.
The clock is ticking as the final days of the congressional session are upon us, but lawmakers can still pass meaningful legislation. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
As families gather over the holidays to give thanks, Americans for Prosperity is hard at work making sure that Congress takes advantage of the last few weeks of 2018 to move forward and come together on some important policies and reforms. We're committed to working with anyone to advance common sense policies to solve societal challenges. In the coming weeks, I invite you to be part of a campaign to come together and help us work with congressional leaders to address important issues like criminal justice reform, immigration, reining in spending, and promoting free trade. This week, we announced our first step post-midterms to drive action around these priorities with a major effort over the Thanksgiving holiday. This campaign will thank specific lawmakers across more than 40 states who have championed these issues and will urge others to come together to solve some of the biggest challenges facing our country. We hope to make these important issues top of mind for lawmakers and their constituents heading into the upcoming lame duck session and into the new Congress. Criminal justice reform is a crucial issue. We need policies that will reduce recidivism, lower crime rates, and ensure people who have paid their debt to society can re-enter society successfully. We also must allow judges to issue proportional sentences that deliver justice to perpetrators and their victims while creating a second chance for people who have earned one. The First Step Act would achieve all these objectives and would save money for the American people. The U.S. House of Representatives has already passed the First Step Act by a vote of 360 to 59, and President Trump is eager to sign it into law, as the legislation also has strong backing from law enforcement. Now it's time for the U.S. Senate to act. AFP is also asking Senate and House lawmakers to step up and support U.S. jobs by opposing harmful tariffs and supporting American trade. And in Pennsylvania, we are recognizing Senator Pat Toomey for his support of U.S. jobs by working against harmful tariffs and supporting American trade. Congress also needs to come together to find a permanent solution for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, known as DACA. According to a Gallup poll, a record high 75% of Americans say immigration is a good thing for our country, with support jumping to 84% when defined as legal immigration. And 83% approve of allowing DACA immigrants to become citizens. Lawmakers should capitalize on record high support and pass legislation that provides a permanent solution. Finally, this year, for the first time in history, the federal government gobbled up over $4 trillion. This year's massive $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill and appalling budget deal further set the stage for continued massive increases in federal spending, trillion-dollar deficits, and ballooning national debt. This out-of-control spending shows reckless disregard for the burden on future generations and is a sign that lawmakers in Washington from both parties have abdicated their role as stewards of taxpayer dollars. Thankfully, some lawmakers are leading to rein in out-of-control spending. Pennsylvanians should be thankful and proud of U.S. Representatives Scott Perry and Lloyd Smucker for standing up for our families and communities by voting against the massive spending bill. So as you sit around the table with family and friends, know that Americans for Prosperity is out in your community and in the halls of Congress advocating for principled policy measures that empower individuals to achieve their own version of the American dream. I'm thankful for the opportunity to serve you and our teams across Pennsylvania, and I look forward to working and fighting alongside you and countless others to bring about more prosperity and individual fulfillment across our great Commonwealth and our nation as we head into 2019. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Join our effort at www.afppennsylvania.org.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCCL-FM and WADJ-AM in Johnstown, along with WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Lafayette Hill, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.